A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been reading the foodborne illness headlines again, and this time, the culprit has a name most people can't pronounce. Cyclospora. He wants to know what it actually is, why it's suddenly showing up in lettuce after all these years, and whether the average salad eater needs to genuinely worry, or can keep ordering the crunchy taco supreme without a second thought.
And this one's worth digging into, because the answer to all three of those questions is weirder than the headlines suggest. It's not a bacteria, which is what most people assume when they hear foodborne outbreak. It's a parasite. A single-celled one, but a parasite nonetheless.
Which matters for treatment, right? You don't just ride out a parasite the way you might ride out a mild case of E. coli.
It matters for everything. Treatment, detection, how it spreads, why it took so long to show up in the news cycle. The whole story changes once you know it's not a bacterium.
So, let's start there. What exactly is Cyclospora chitinensis?
It's a coccidian parasite. Single cell, related to Toxoplasma and Cryptosporidium, if those names ring any bells. The key thing about its life cycle is that when it leaves a human body, it's not infectious yet. It needs time outside, in the environment, to sporulate. That process takes days to weeks depending on temperature and humidity. So unlike norovirus or salmonella, you can't catch this from someone coughing on you or shaking your hand. It's not person to person.
Which is counterintuitive. Most people hear parasite and think it's like pinworms or something that spreads through a household.
Right, and that's one of the big misconceptions. Cyclospora has to sit on a leaf or in water long enough to mature before it can infect anyone. That's why it's always linked to produce, not to a sick food handler in the kitchen. The contamination happened upstream, probably contaminated irrigation water or poor hygiene somewhere in the growing or packing process. Then the parasite sat on the lettuce long enough to become infectious.
So the lettuce isn't just a vehicle, it's an incubator.
The lettuce is doing the parasite's homework for it.
Lovely. So what's the current situation? Daniel mentioned Taco Bell.
CDC surveillance has cases across 30 states, and Taco Bell is a common exposure point in the interviews they're doing with sick people. But here's the thing, and I want to be clear about this because it's the kind of nuance that gets lost. Taco Bell isn't growing lettuce behind the restaurant. They're buying it from the same massive produce suppliers that everyone else uses. The same parasite caused a big outbreak linked to McDonald's salads back in 2018. Hundreds of confirmed cases across multiple states. Same supply chain dynamic.
So, this is less a Taco Bell problem, and more we've concentrated our lettuce production into a handful of enormous growing regions problem.
When one farm has a contamination event, it hits national chains simultaneously. The lettuce goes out on trucks to 40 states before anyone knows there's a problem. And because the incubation period is so long, by the time people start showing up at doctors' offices, the lettuce is gone. Eaten, sold, composted, whatever.
Wait, how long is the incubation period?
1 to 2 weeks, sometimes longer. Compare that to salmonella or E. coli, where you're sick within 24 to 72 hours. That delay makes outbreak tracing dramatically harder. You ask someone what they ate 2 weeks ago, they don't remember. The restaurant doesn't have the produce anymore. The supplier's already moved on to the next harvest.
That's a public health nightmare. Trying to connect dots across a 2-week gap.
It's why these outbreaks take so long to identify. The CDC has a whole surveillance system for this, and it's gotten better in recent years, which I want to come back to. But the fundamental problem is that by the time you confirm a cluster of Cyclospora cases, the source is usually gone.
So we know what it is. Now let's talk about why it's so good at hiding.
The detection gap is the part that I find fascinating. Standard food safety testing doesn't look for parasites. The tests are designed for bacteria, coli, salmonella, listeria. Those are cultured on agar plates. They grow overnight. You can see colonies. Cyclospora doesn't grow in culture. You can't just swab a leaf and watch what grows.
So the tests are blind to it?
Completely blind. To find Cyclospora, you need specialized molecular testing, PCR, polymerase chain reaction, which amplifies the parasite's DNA. Most food testing labs don't run that unless someone specifically asks for it. And even then, the parasite is hard to extract from produce. It's not evenly distributed. You could test one head of lettuce and miss it, and the next head over is loaded.
So, it's not just that we weren't looking. We didn't have the tools pointed in the right direction.
Right. And on the clinical side, it's also tricky. The symptoms are watery diarrhea, cramping, fatigue, sometimes low-grade fever, nausea. That's a lot of things. Most doctors, if you come in with those symptoms, are going to immediately think parasite. They might think viral gastroenteritis, or irritable bowel, or just something you ate. The test for Cyclospora requires a specific stool sample request. It's not part of a standard panel.
So someone could have this for weeks and not know what it is.
And that's exactly what happens. The illness can last 2 to 3 weeks without treatment, sometimes longer. It's not the kind of thing where you're violently ill for a day and then fine. It's a grinding, miserable, prolonged thing. And if you don't get the right diagnosis, you just suffer through it.
And treatment?
This is where it gets important. It's not a waited-out illness. There's a specific antibiotic, trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. It's a combination drug, also known as Bactrim or Ceptra. Most people don't have it sitting in their medicine cabinet. And here's the thing, if you don't complete the full course, or if you're immunocompromised, it can relapse. The parasite can come back.
So it's not just a bad week, it's a bad month, if you're unlucky.
And for people with weakened immune systems, it can be much worse, chronic, debilitating, even life-threatening in rare cases. But for an average healthy person, it's miserable but not usually dangerous, which is part of the risk assessment we need to get to.
Before we do, I want to go back to something you said. The parasite needs time outside the body to become infectious. That means the contamination isn't happening at the restaurant, right? It's not a fluid handler who didn't wash their hands.
Correct. And this is a really common misconception. People assume foodborne illness means someone in the kitchen was unhygienic. With Cyclospora, the contamination almost certainly happened at the farm or packing facility. Contaminated irrigation water is the usual suspect, or contaminated wash water, or a worker in the field who didn't have proper sanitation facilities. The parasite gets onto the produce, and then the produce sits in a truck or a warehouse for a few days, and that's enough time for sporulation.
So the restaurant is just the last link in a chain that started weeks earlier and hundreds of miles away.
And that's why blaming Taco Bell specifically is missing the point. They didn't do anything wrong, at least not in the way people assume. They bought lettuce from a supplier that had a contamination problem. The same supplier probably sold to a dozen other chains and thousands of grocery stores.
So what's the actual scale of this outbreak? Daniel mentioned it's in the news, but how big are we talking?
The CDC surveillance data shows cases across 30 states. But here's the thing about Cyclospora numbers. The confirmed case count is always a massive underestimate. For every confirmed case, there are probably dozens or hundreds of unreported ones. Most people with diarrhea don't go to the doctor. Most doctors don't test for Cyclospora. Most people who get tested don't get reported to the CDC. The surveillance pyramid is very steep.
So when the CDC says, I don't know, 300 cases, the real number is...
thousands. Maybe tens of thousands. It's hard to say precisely, but the undercount is dramatic. That's true for most foodborne illnesses, but it's especially true for Cyclospora because the testing is so specialized.
And you said the numbers have been climbing. That's the why now, question Daniel asked.
Right, and this is where it gets interesting. Cyclospora isn't new. It's been known since the 1990s. The first major U.S. outbreak was in 1996, linked to Guatemalan raspberries. That was a big deal at the time. Hundreds of cases, a lot of public health investigation, and it put Cyclospora on the map. But it wasn't the first time it had ever existed. It's endemic in tropical and subtropical regions. Peru, Guatemala, parts of Asia. It's been there forever.
So why does it feel new?
Two reasons, and they're both important. First, surveillance has gotten dramatically better. The CDC has a system called CryptoNet, and there's a Cyclosporiasis reporting system that links cases across states using molecular fingerprinting. In the 1990s, if you had cases in 15 states, nobody would connect them. Now, they can sequence the parasite's DNA and say, oh, these cases in Ohio and these cases in Texas are the same strain, they probably came from the same source. That's a huge change.
So part of the rise is just that we're finally seeing what was always there.
It's not that the parasite suddenly appeared. It's that we finally have the tools to notice it. But there's a second factor, and it's the one that makes me a little more concerned. The case counts have been setting records in recent years. The seasonal pattern is very clear. Spring through early fall, peaking in the summer. That's when the protist is moving, and that's when the environmental conditions favor the parasite.
And climate?
Cyclospora is endemic in tropical and subtropical regions. Warmer, wetter conditions favor its survival and sporulation. As climate patterns shift, the geographic range where this parasite can thrive is expanding. Growing regions that were previously too cool or too dry are now more hospitable. Not to be dramatic, but the parasite's address book is getting longer.
So it's not just better detection. There's a real signal in there too.
I think so. The honest answer is that it's probably both. Better surveillance is revealing cases that were always there, and climate change is creating more opportunities for the parasite to spread. Untangling those two things is hard, and I don't think anyone has a clean answer yet.
But the practical upshot is that we're going to see more of these outbreaks, not fewer.
That's my read. The testing gap isn't going away. The supply chain concentration isn't going away. The climate factors aren't going away. If anything, all three are getting worse. So yes, expect more cyclospora headlines.
Which brings us to Daniel's actual question. Should ordinary lettuce eaters be worried?
The nuanced answer is, not panicked, but aware. For an average healthy person, the risk of severe illness is low. The risk of a miserable 2 to 3 week illness is real, but not catastrophic. You're not going to die from this unless you're immunocompromised or have some other underlying condition, but you might spend a few weeks regretting that salad.
And the washing thing. I've seen people say, just wash your lettuce thoroughly. Does that work?
No. And this is the misconception that bugs me the most, because it gives people false confidence. Washing lettuce, even washing it thoroughly, doesn't reliably remove cyclospora. The parasite is sticky. It adheres to the leaf surface, and it's tiny. You can rinse all day, and it's still there. To actually kill it, you need cooking or freezing. And nobody's cooking their iceberg lettuce.
The advice is, what? Don't eat lettuce?
I mean, you could. And plenty of people do, and most of them are fine. The absolute risk is still low. But if you're someone who's immunocompromised, or pregnant, or elderly, or you just really don't want to spend 3 weeks in the bathroom, you might think twice about raw lettuce from a large commercial supplier during the summer months. Or you could stick to cooked greens. Spinach in a stir fry is fine. A salad is a roll of the dice.
That's a grim way to think about a salad.
It is. And I don't want to overstate it. The vast majority of lettuce isn't contaminated. The vast majority of people who eat lettuce every day never get sick, but the risk isn't zero, and it's not evenly distributed. It spikes during outbreaks, and it spikes in certain supply chains.
What does this tell us about the food system more broadly?
This is the part I keep coming back to. Our food safety system was built for bacteria. The testing, the regulatory framework, the outbreak response protocols, all of it's designed around the pathogens we knew about in the 20th century. E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria. Parasites like Cyclospora don't fit that framework. They don't grow in culture. They don't respond to the same interventions. They have different life cycles and different contamination routes. And we're only now starting to build the tools to deal with them.
It's a systems problem, not just a Taco Bell problem.
Right, and the system is slow to adapt. The FDA has been working on produce safety rules for years, and they've made progress, but the testing gap is still there. Most produce is still not tested for parasites. The supply chain is still concentrated. The climate is still changing. The incentives are still aligned towards speed and volume rather than resilience.
Which is a bigger conversation than one lettuce outbreak.
Much bigger. But that's what makes this story interesting. It's not just about a parasite. It's about how we built a food system that's very good at moving produce quickly and very bad at catching the things that move with it.
Let me ask you the question from the other direction. If you were in charge of a restaurant chain right now, what would you do differently?
Honestly, I'd diversify my lettuce suppliers, not put all my eggs in one basket, so to speak. I'd push for more testing, even though it's expensive and slow. I'd think about sourcing from regions with lower endemic rates. And I'd probably accept that some of this is just unavoidable. You can't test every leaf. You can't eliminate every risk. You can only manage it.
For the average person listening to this, who just wants to eat a taco.
The average person should know that this is a real thing, but not a reason to stop eating. The risk is low, but it's not zero. If you're healthy and you want a salad, eat a salad. If you're immunocompromised, maybe think twice. And if you get sick with diarrhea that lasts more than a few days, especially in the summer, ask your doctor about cyclospora, because most doctors won't think of it on their own.
That's a practical takeaway. Ask for the test.
It's the single most useful thing I can tell people. The test isn't standard. You have to ask for it. And if you don't ask, you might spend weeks being treated for the wrong thing.
Which brings us to someone who's been in the lettuce supply chain longer than any of us.
1996. Guatemalan raspberries. I was doing visual inspections of incoming lettuce shipments for a regional grocery chain in Ohio. My boss told us to look for the shiny spots.
Shiny spots?
That was the guidance. Look for the shiny spots on the lettuce. That's how you'll know it's contaminated. I stood there with a flashlight looking for shiny spots on iceberg lettuce for 3 months. Never found one. Not because I was bad at it. Because you can't see a parasite with the naked eye. It's a hundredth the width of a human hair.
That's about right, actually. Cyclospora oocysts are about 8 to 10 micrometers. You'd need a microscope, not a flashlight.
I told my boss that. He said I wasn't looking hard enough, so I looked harder. Still nothing. Then the outbreak ended, and we all went back to not thinking about it. I've been waiting 30 years for someone to ask me about the shiny spots.
Did the chain ever change its inspection protocol?
They changed the wording on the form, added a box for visual inspection for parasites. Same guy with the same flashlight. I quit about a year later. Not because of the lettuce, because the store manager wanted me to work Sundays.
You spent a year doing visual inspections for something that can't be seen visually.
I spent a year doing visual inspections for something that can't be seen visually, and then I went to work for a company that made industrial ice machines. That was worse. The lettuce at least didn't have moving parts.
Do you still eat lettuce?
Every day. Raw. I had a salad for lunch before I came in here. My wife makes me wash it 3 times now. She read something about the Taco Bell thing, and now there's a whole ritual. 3 rinses, then the salad spinner, then another rinse. I told her it doesn't work. The washing doesn't do anything. But she said it makes her feel better, so I do it.
She's not wrong, you know. The washing doesn't reliably remove the parasite, but it does remove dirt and some bacteria, so it's not completely pointless.
That's what I told her. I said, look, I inspected lettuce for a year. I know what's on it. She said, that's exactly why you should wash it, which I guess is fair.
You've been in the supply chain, and you still eat the salad.
I've been in a lot of supply chains. If I stopped eating everything I'd inspected, I'd starve. I inspected frozen pizzas for a summer. You don't want to know what I saw there.
I probably don't.
You don't.
But it's a useful data point, right? Here's someone who spent a year looking at lettuce, who knows exactly what the risks are, and he still eats it every day. That tells you something about the actual risk level.
It tells you I'm either lucky, or the risk is lower than the headline suggests. I've never gotten cyclospora, never gotten salmonella, never gotten anything worse than a bad oyster in 1998, and that was my own fault. I knew the place was sketchy.
The concern is real, but the panic is overblown.
The concern is real. The panic sells ads. The lettuce is probably fine, most of it, most of the time. But when it's not fine, it's a nightmare, and you won't know for 2 weeks. And by then, the lettuce is gone, and the restaurant has changed suppliers, and nobody can figure out what happened. That's the part that bothers me, not the getting sick, the not knowing.
The traceability gap.
Call it what you want. I call it the part where everyone shrugs and says, well, we'll never know. I spent a year in that industry, and that was the answer to everything. We'll never know. Where did the contamination come from? We'll never know. Which farm? We'll never know. Is it still in the supply chain? We'll never know. It's not a great answer when you're the one trying to decide whether to eat a salad.
That's the systemic problem in a nutshell. We built a system that moves food fast, but doesn't know where it's been.
I drove a truck for a produce distributor for 6 months in the late 90s. I picked up lettuce in California on a Tuesday and dropped it in Ohio on a Friday. The paperwork said lettuce. No farm name, no lot number, no harvest date. Just lettuce. If there was a problem, where do you even start?
That's changed somewhat since then. The Food Safety Modernization Act required better traceability for some produce, but it's still not where it needs to be.
It's better. It's not good. And the testing is still the bottleneck. You can trace a bag of lettuce back to a farm, but if you never tested the lettuce for cyclospora, what have you learned?
That's the question, isn't it? We're getting better at seeing the problem, but we're still not great at preventing it.
You want to prevent it, you have to change how you grow lettuce. Different water sources, different sanitation, different testing at the farm level. That costs money. Lettuce is cheap. Nobody wants to pay more for lettuce. So we get cheap lettuce and occasional cyclospora. That's the trade.
That's the honest assessment. The system is optimized for cost and speed, not for parasite detection. Until that changes, we're going to keep seeing these outbreaks.
I still eat the salad. That's all I'm saying. I know the risks, and I eat the salad. Make of that what you will.
Where does that leave us? The lettuce isn't necessarily more dangerous than it was 20 years ago. We're just finally seeing what was always there.
The open question is whether the rise in cases is a surveillance artifact, a climate signal, or both. Can we even tell the difference? I don't think we can, not yet. The systems are too entangled.
But the direction of travel is clear. More testing, more climate pressure, more concentrated supply chains, more parasites in places we didn't expect.
The food safety system was built for bacteria. It's not clear it can adapt quickly enough for parasites. That's the thing I keep coming back to.
That's the real story. It's that we built a system for one set of threats, and now we're facing another set. And the system is struggling to keep up.
Which is a very human problem, honestly. We're always fighting the last war.
We are. And the next war is going to be fought with microscopes and PCR machines, not flashlights and shiny spot inspections.
Thanks to Hilbert for producing, as always.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own weird questions, email the show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.